The show is Live and Local, your local performance connection. I'm Kevin Kelly, and on the show today, we have the principal timpanist of the Philadelphia Orchestra, Don Liuzzi. He's actually with us because he's the drummer for the Depew Brothers Band, who specialize in bluegrass and other things. And they're going to be playing tonight at the Dowden Fine Arts Center on the campus of Eastern Illinois University in Charleston. That concert starts at 7:30. And also on the show today, conductor Richard Haglund, who is presenting a series of lectures. You can call them lectures. They sound to be more like interactive experiences, called Discover the Symphony Orchestra. The first one actually happened this morning at the Alumni Center on the campus of Illinois State University in Normal. The next one is tomorrow morning, and he'll be covering the brass section of the orchestra tomorrow. That's at 9:30. And then on Monday, there's another, and next Wednesday wraps up the series. So we'll be hearing about that from Richard Haglund on the second portion of our show today. It's Live and Local. Stay tuned.
Thank you.
That was a tune called Catfish Corners by Tony Trischka, who is a fine banjo player, and he is on this recording called Weapons of Grass Construction by the DePue Brothers Band. It's a wonderful title. And reference, in case you don't get it, is to Bluegrass. And they're going to be at the Dowdna Fine Arts Center at Eastern Illinois University in Charleston tonight at 7:30. With me on this portion of Live and Local is the drummer for the band, who has an unexpected lineage, I would say. Don Liuzzi is the principal timpani player of the Philadelphia Orchestra. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks so much, Kevin. Pleasure.
And you've turned out to be, I understand, kind of the roadie and road manager for the band.
I've got about three hats going. So
yeah, what are those three hats?
Well, I'm the business manager, for one, and then I'm the road manager, that's the second, and then I'm the drummer and a part-time vocalist.
So how did you get roped into all of that? Maybe in order, drummer, road manager, business manager.
Yeah. I really got interested in the brothers. Two of the brothers are, well, two of them have been in the Philadelphia Orchestra for about 10 years. And I was actually working on a film, Music from the Inside Out, which is a documentary film that came out in 2005. And part of my work as coordinating producer for the film, even while I was in the orchestra, was getting musicians from the orchestra to find out what they do that's outside of their normal onstage orchestra work. And so I found these brothers, a pair of them, Jason, who's still in the orchestra, and Zach, who is now the concertmaster of Indianapolis Symphony. I found these brothers, and they said, hey, we got two other brothers. So there's like four of them.
All play the violin.
Yeah, they're all virtuoso violinists and really classically trained. But they all have a proclivity to be fine bluegrass players.
How did they, any idea how they got into bluegrass?
Well,
That doesn't happen to every orchestral violinist.
No, they're unusual, but they, their father was a professor at Bowling Green State University. And they grew up in that Northwestern Ohio. And in the summer times, their musical training included doing arrangements of classical pieces amongst themselves as brothers, as for violin. One of the pieces on the album you'll hear is a virtuoso classical piece called Dance of the Goblins. It's it shows off their kind of virtuosity. But they've been doing this for a long time. And in the summers, their father would take them out on the road. And, of course, being at all these little summer camps and music festivals, they also were throughout the Midwest, they were getting to know bluegrass playing, and they loved it. And they all became a part of their musical expression.
The other two brothers, at least one of the brothers, has made a bit more of a name for himself in the rock world.
Yeah. Alex DePue, he's one of the regular violinists for Steve Vai.
Guitarist?
Yeah, guitar. Wonderful virtuoso, probably the greatest virtuoso in our generation now. But he plays with him regularly in a tour, did his recent tour throughout the world a couple years ago. And he also has played with Kevin Costner's band. I don't know if you knew Kevin Costner.
I didn't.
It's kind of
that explains why we haven't seen him in the movies for a while.
I think it does, actually. It's his other love. But and he also plays with some Mexican guitarists. He's quite a potpourri of styles that he plays. But he's truly one of the great rock violinists in this country.
How many are there?
There are not many, but he's one of them. You'll hear him tonight.
I know I talked to Zach within the last couple or 3 years, Zach DePue, who's the one who's the concertmaster with Indianapolis. Mm. And I think, I don't remember if this CD was out yet, but the previous one was out, which people can't get right now, which also had a pretty good name, if I remember. Was it just Classical Grass?
Classical Grass, yeah.
Yeah. Which was a lot of fun.
It's being re-released by January 1st, so.
Good. Well, you need to keep going because it's fun music. Well, since you mentioned this tune called Dance of the Goblins, this is often played by solo violinists as a virtuoso piece by Antonio Bazzini, sometimes with piano, usually with piano, I think, and arranged here by the DePue Brothers and played by the DePue Brothers Band.
Yeah, it's got two guitar tracks that go with as the accompaniment.
It'll be a lot of fun. Here they are from Weapons of Grass Destruction. I can't say it. Construction.
Construction.
Grass Construction on Live and Local.
Thank you.
Well, that was a special rendition of Antonio Bazzini's Dance of the Goblins, arranged by the Depew Brothers, who are all violinists, and they're all heard in that performance with the Depew Brothers Band on the disc called, I'm going to get this right this time, I'm going to read it, Weapons of Grass Construction, and they're going to be at the Dowdna Fine Arts Center in Charleston tonight at 7:30. Our show here on Live and Local today is made possible with support from Outback Concerts, presenting Australian guitarist and CMA Global Country Artist Award winner Tommy Emmanuel at the Virginia Theater on September 21st. Tickets are on sale now at thevirginia.org. Charge by phone, 217-356-9063. And might as well put in a pitch for the fact that Tommy Emmanuel is going to be on this show next Wednesday, playing live in this very studio. We had a grand time when he was here about a year ago, and looking forward to it again. Also bring his colleagues who are going to be playing, who are playing on the tour with him. But on this portion of our show today, we have Don Liuzzi, who is the drummer for the Depew Brothers Band, also principal timpani player of the Philadelphia Orchestra. How many of the Philadelphia Orchestra players are closet players of some other kind of music, or maybe not even in the closet about it?
Yeah, more than you think. It's, I would say, about 25 to 30% of
Seriously?
The orchestra. Yes, do a variety of musics other than just your normal chamber music, classical chamber music. We have actually a jazz group. It's loosely organized called Philorc Jazz, but we're sometimes as small as a quartet, but sometimes we're as big as like us. Like a Gil Evans big band or something. We do arrangements of Rite of Spring that'll knock your socks off, and some other kind of. We do a Copland Billy the Kid suite that's pretty neat. Lends itself well to jazz playing.
Yeah, I guess I'd have to hear it. I'd be really curious to hear how that works. Have you done a lot of drumming yourself, you know?
Yeah, I started off. I mean, typically orchestral percussionists, when they start, are when they're little kids. They're getting their snare drum skills together. You know,
and you have your snare drum.
This is my snare drum from my very first snare drum drum teacher. It's a beautiful Dynasonic deep 6-inch drum. But anyway, so we're busy learning how to do double strokes and paradiddles and perfect double bounces, and then eventually in the orchestral world getting into like Lieutenant Kiji's little suite. So it's something like that. Is we spend hours and hours on, you know, going from our young drumming up until into high school to be able to audition for classical percussion schools. But we're also at the same time playing drum set. Often bass players, many of the bass players in the Philly Orchestra are developing jazz skills, as well as half the bass section are very good jazzers, actually, in our orchestra. The principal bassist is wonderful, Hal Robinson, and Mike Shan. I mean, all these guys, most of them have some ability with jazz playing. Our bassist, who has played extra with the Philadelphia Orchestra, but has a variety of jazz and bluegrass skills and orchestral skills.
I know I'm not sure if he's still principal with the Chicago Symphony anymore, but the principal bassist used to always be seen in jazz clubs after the orchestra concerts.
Wow.
In
great.
Chicago, Joseph Guastafesti. I'm not sure if he's still there or not.
No, I think he was
often playing.
I think he retired. But yeah, no, there's another bassist at the Chicago Symphony whose name is escaping me, but I've actually played jazz with. He's terrific. So this is not unusual.
I've been surprised sometimes. I know our head of percussion studies here at the University of Illinois, William Mersch, and he told me once that a lot of the, or at least some of the percussionists in his studio don't actually own drum sets, because some of them haven't actually spent a lot of time doing that, which really surprised me.
Yeah, that does surprise me too. It is true, though. I mean, in today's specialized world, the students of today, literally within, I think, the last 10 years are getting so focused on compartmentalizing, which is a little disconcerting for me, actually. I believe that you should not only hone your skills on once you find something you love, you do have to really focus in on it. But I also think there's something very special about branching out a bit. You know, I went to Tanglewood as a young student in college, and Gunther Schuller, I had been playing in a jazz group at college and pretty actively. Around the time that I auditioned for Gunther, and I had realized Gunther had done some major transcriptions of Charlie Parker, but
you had not read?
I had, yeah. but I hadn't read them, and I hadn't really studied them, he did a little ear training test with some pretty interesting chords, you know, jazz oriented chords, and saying, please sing the third, the fifth, the seventh, the ninth. And I was able to do that, and that's an important skill.
Congratulations.
Yeah, well, no, that's an important skill as a musician.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
And then I said, I said, I think you're interested in jazz, aren't you, Mr. Schuller? And he kind of grinned and said, yes.
Just a little bit, yeah. Well, I wondered, you said such a high percentage of the Philadelphia Orchestra. Is that tend to be younger ones, middle-aged ones, older ones, or across the spectrum?
It's a variety. It's a variety. As far as genres of music, we've got a cellist who's about my age, in his early 50s, who's an Israeli cellist, Udi Bar David is his name. He has a group called Intercultural Journeys, where he matches Israeli Middle Eastern music with Chinese pipa playing or Native American flute playing, or his whole musical chamber music experience is about mixing genres, world genres of music, folk genres, and seeing where they meet and how they can make music together.
Well, that sort of thing I am fascinated by. That's fantastic to hear. Well, you brought not only your snare drum, but you brought a whole array of sticks and a couple of cymbals, and we took the time to get them all mic'd up properly.
Right. I better talk about it.
and I guess we did that for a couple reasons. One, I'm very curious to know, first of all, as the timpanist of the orchestra, you don't always get to play some of the other percussion instruments,
right?
Symphonically.
My role for percussion in the Philadelphia Orchestra is limited. When they need an extra in a contemporary piece, when there's no timpani, which does happen, Messiaen rarely wrote for timpani. I think there's only one orchestral work that he has timpani. I think his first orchestral work, Les Offrandes.
But he probably needs a whole ton of percussion.
No. And then, of course, Turangalila and all the other works that he wrote are major percussion. So I'll hang over with the percussion section on all the Messiaen works and contemporary works that don't have timpani.
So what kind of adaptations do you have to make, either technically or equipment or mentally, to play this kind of music?
Well, for the bluegrass, for the brothers, it's a real mix. I mean, every tune is something different. We do a mixture of pure bluegrass or some of the progressive bluegrass, like you heard in Catfish Corners, the opening of the show, where I was playing a dumbek. This is not a dumbek, it's just the tom-tom of the snare drum, but I'm, playing, kind of on a dumbek style, and a shaker, a little egg shaker. That was what all I played on that tune. But for the rest of the album, I have a traditional drum kit, like you would any jazz kit, but I have a variety of sticks. I mean, obviously brushes. You would have that. I can
already tell you which ones are my favorites if I saw them right. I'll tell you when you pick them up.
Okay.
Well, actually, that's one of them right there.
This is a kind of a brush. It's a plastic brushes, rods they call them.
Oh no, that's not it.
It's a lighter sound, and I need, especially in a hall like Dvorak Hall at the Dudna Center. Rock drumming is not going to cut it. If I come in and play like Vinnie Caliuta,
that has a much less pointed sound.
Yeah, and this is another kind of brushy sound. These are, again, plastic, plastic rods with a little more weight.
And just so listeners, because they can't see this, the big difference, at least that I'm seeing, between the two you just played is the one just before, the bundle of plastic rods is much longer, and so sounds slightly looser.
Yeah, looser.
Whereas
lighter.
The second one is a much shorter, with most of the stick being wood, so it's tighter.
Exactly. Good. Yeah, you're good at this. Yeah, I can tell you're a conductor.
Here we go. These are the ones.
These are wooden rods, very thin wooden rods. These are my favorite in the group. And I'll play a lot of these tonight, especially in a sensitive hall like the Dvorak Hall. So they act like sticks. They have a bounce. So I can actually use them like sticks. But they're incredibly light. So now these are just a slightly heavier version. It's a little thicker dowel and a little bigger bunch. It's kind of a fatter sound. So I can just play a little heavier for some of the louder moments. And these now are even thicker rods. Less number, but a thicker sound. Now we're getting towards more the stick end of life here. These are my little favorite cymbals that I use. I'm a big Chinese cymbal fan. So,
well, it's too bad folks can't see these because these are, what kind, are these Chinese cymbals? Because they're very different looking than I've usually seen.
They're made in Wuhan. You know, Wuhan is a center of both tam-tams and Chinese cymbals. If you've been to the central China or Wuhan, I have several times. Philadelphia Orchestra's been, and I've been to the factory in Wuhan. Both the Tam Tam factory and the cymbal factory. It's incredible the amount of instruments they're putting out and really quality instruments. You know, the thing about a Chinese cymbal, and I'll give you a good crash here and see how, so you can see what that sounds like for your listeners. So what you hear an immediate splash sound. I mean, it's a very...
It shocked me, actually.
It's a shocking sound. And it's got very... Oh, yeah. It's got high overtones and very low overtones, and not much in the middle. Like your typical standard cymbal is this. A Turkish-style cymbal, which has a real mix of highs, lows, and mediums. But these Chinese cymbals have big low frequencies and very much big high frequencies. So you hear that kind of dark, almost tam-tam sound.
And then how about this smaller one?
It's kind of a similar version, only smaller and higher in basic pitch.
It almost sounds like a Chinese gong.
Yeah.
Similar characteristics.
Yeah, there's so many amazing gongs made over. There's one called a feng gong, which is called a wind gong. And when you play it with, see if I have sticks that are going to give me that sound.
What about fingers, yeah.
They're so immediate response, they respond so quickly because they're thin, very thin.
And again, for our listeners who can't see these, the ends, usually the cymbal turns down at the ends, and these actually turn up almost like the brim of a hat.
Yeah, there's a couple reasons for that. There's something scientific about the sound that it helps produce, but also these cymbals are often put together and played.
He's taking them off the stands now. We're going to get a crash, I think.
You're getting a little crash here. Hold on here. And you see people, like a marching wedding procession. And sometimes they scrape them. And it's
a Chinese marching wedding procession.
Yes, a Chinese wedding.
Wouldn't hear that during the Mendelssohn wedding march.
No, that's a good comparison there.
You know, I watched the New York Philharmonic broadcast Sunday night on 9/11 of the Mahler Second Symphony. Mm. You don't have one of the sticks that they used, which was actually a bundle of sticks. It looked like a bundle of...
The German word is called Rute.
It looks like a bundle of sticks you picked out of the woods.
Yeah.
Fine ones.
Yeah, it's very... It's called Rute, and sometimes these rod sticks can do the same situation. And they're played usually on the shell of a bass drum. And actually, I do this in the DePue band. So sometimes I take these sticks, and if I want a sound that's just kind of a rhythmic sound, but the shell of the drum, That's the, in essence, what ruta are used on the bass drum that, that Mahler wanted.
So in this case, Donis has grabbed a couple of these sticks together, so it makes a bigger bunch.
Yeah, bigger bunch of sticks. Yeah,
yeah, and a couple of extra hits.
Yeah.
Well, let's hear, I know you have to go, well, right about now, I think.
Yeah, right, I'm on the road.
Yeah, so we gotta get you back, because you all are given a master class at 1 o'clock down at... 2 o'clock.
2 o'clock.
Oh, yeah. You'll be late if it's 1 o'clock. At 2 o'clock down at Eastern, Dodd Liuzzi has been my guest. He's principal timpanist to the Philadelphia Orchestra, but also the drummer for the Depew Brothers Band. And they're going to be playing tonight at the Dowdna Fine Arts Center at Eastern Illinois University in Charleston. Concert starts at 7:30. And if you want more information, you can go to eiu.edu/Dowdna, D-O-U-D-N-A. And the phone numbers are on there. And anything else you need to know. And Don, it's been a real pleasure.
I hope to see you tonight.
Yeah, well, actually, I'd love to come. I'm trying to sort out if that's going to be possible.
Yeah, okay.
I've actually been down a number of concerts there. It's a great hall. Yeah. Have you been there?
No, I've just seen pictures. I'm really looking forward to it.
Yeah, well, I bet you haven't been on an all copper clad hall before, or maybe have you?
But that'll be like playing the inside of timpani, you know?
Yeah, that's right. Now you find out how that drum feels when you hit it on the head, right? It'll just be, your head will be ringing.
Good.
Don Liuzzi of the Depew Brothers Band. Here's the tune that they may actually go out with tonight, and they do go out with it on their CD called Weapons of Grass Construction. You actually might recognize this tune. It's called The Orange Blossom Special, arranged by the Depew Brothers on Live and Local. Yeah, that's about the right comment to make about that. The Orange Blossom Special, as played by all four violin virtuoso DePue brothers with the DePue Brothers Band, and they'll be at Dowden the Fine Arts Center in Charleston tonight at 7:30. And I understand that tune will be on the program. You're listening to Live and Local on FM 90.9. I'm Kevin Kelly. Appreciate your joining us today. Stay tuned next for a conversation with conductor Richard Hagland, who is giving a series of lecture conversations at Illinois State University at the Alumni Center there called Discover the Symphony Orchestra. This morning he talked about the woodwinds, so you've missed that segment. He'll still talk about the woodwinds actually in our conversation today, though. And then tomorrow morning it's the brass at 9:30 next Monday. Also, he covers the percussion instruments, and then on Wednesday, it's the strings. Richard Hagland coming up in a moment on Live and Local. And here are the brass sections of the Philadelphia Orchestra, the Chicago Symphony, and the Cleveland Orchestra, all together in some music by Giovanni Gabrielli. My next guest on Live and Local is Richard Hagland, who was until recently assistant conductor of the Illinois Symphony Orchestra and conductor of the Sangamon Valley Youth Symphony there, and also of the community orchestra there, and is doing some other really interesting things, including on Friday, Monday, and Wednesday, giving a lecture series at Illinois State University called Discover the Symphony Orchestra. The first one actually happened this morning, in which he focused on the woodwinds, but he's taking section at a time each of those next three mornings, and they'll be each at 9:30 in the morning at the Alumni Center on the ISU campus. And Richard is on the phone with me right now as he is on the road. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me. It's great to be here. Yesterday I was in New York, and now I'm on my way down to Springfield and meet up with some people. Then I'm up in Bloomington for a while again. I'm really looking forward to the Academy of Senior Learners. I always start out the class telling them they can ask any question they want, because I'm so used to students asking whether or not the information is going to be on the exam or not, and they never have to ask that question. So it's nice to give a lecture and not have students asking if this is going to be on the test or not while you're giving the lecture. They're very curious people, and I did a lecture series last year that was very well attended. I think there was 80 people or so there, and we just covered the entire history of Western music in four lectures, which was a daunting task for me to do, but we somehow accomplished it. And I was just very intrigued at the questions that were asked, and actually some of the participants' knowledge in music history even coming into the class was fantastic. So I'm looking forward to kind of discovering the symphony orchestra with these people, because I go out and do a lot of educational programs throughout the year. I used to do them a lot with the Illinois Symphony, and I'll be doing them in Chicago with the Urado Chamber Orchestra. And a lot of students have never seen a bassoon up close, or they don't understand how a clarinet works or a flute works. And so it's really fun to show elementary students all these instruments and then explain the symphony. But what I'll do with the Academy of Senior Learners is take it to a little bit higher level. I want to introduce the instruments and show how they've been used in the symphonic repertoire. I want to explain how the physics of each of the instruments kind of works. And then we're also going to have performers at each of the lectures come and play, professionals come and play for the Academy of Senior Learners as well. It won't be a formal recital, but it will be kind of a demonstration of techniques and how the functions of that instrument work and the challenges of that specific instrument, and kind of give people an inside the symphony view. I thought I would do it in score order, because that kind of makes sense to me to start on the top of the score with the woodwind section and relate the soprano, alto, tenor, and bass voices, the woodwind, flute, oboe, clarinet, and bassoon, and then also all the sub-instruments. A lot of people don't realize how many different kinds of clarinets there are and how they're used in different pieces. And so I'll be playing YouTube clips, and I will have several instruments along with me, and I will play a little bit on each of the woodwind instruments, but I'll play poorly, but I'll at least give them an idea of how the physics are of making a sound on these instruments.
What, you said YouTube videos, what sort of things have you found?
Well, I've found things that from really famous performers doing excerpts of different pieces, and I want to show what it takes for professional musicians to even make it into an orchestra. I want to explain how they practice these tiny little excerpts over and over and over endlessly in the practice room in order to then show up at a professional orchestra audition and then play with a couple hundred other people and then get judged on how well they play these excerpts and then move on to the finals. And a lot of people don't understand the whole audition process. I want to go into that a little bit. I've also found excerpts of different sections being featured in different pieces. You know, there's the Petite Symphony of Charles Gounod that just features the woodwinds, for example. And so they can really show specific demonstrations of these each of these sections and how they relate to each other. A lot of people don't really understand the dynamics of even why an orchestra is set up the way it is, and why the principal, I'm going to explain why the principal woodwinds, for example, are all in a quartet very close to each other, and how that relates, and how they're listening to each other and balancing chords and dynamics and articulations and so on. And so I just want to get inside the family of the orchestra and show how all of these different family groupings have to then come together and work together as a team to create this wonderful art.
I understand you'll be talking a little bit about the evolution of some of the instruments?
Exactly. A lot of people don't understand, for example, again on the clarinet, how many advancements have happened since Mozart's time. Well, you know, it was Mozart was 1756 to 1791, and it, you know, basically, the clarinet came into existence during his compositional career, and he wrote the Mozart Clarinet Concerto is still today definitively one of the most important pieces for clarinetists to learn and play and perform, but the clarinet that he wrote that piece for is dramatically different than the modern clarinet that we have today. So I'll be showing pictures of the instruments and how they evolved, what they looked like, you know, in Mozart's time, and then now what the modern clarinet looks looks like and can do, both the B-flat and the A clarinet, as well as all the other clarinets along with that. The E-flat clarinet, I'll show some excerpts of that, as well as the bass clarinet excerpts, and show how within each family of instruments there's actually a soprano, alto, tenor, and bass version, except for the bassoon. But we also have variations on the oboe, with the English horn and the oboe di amore, which are used in different contexts. So all of those things will be discussed and played and showed, and I'm going to open it up for discussion, and then we're going to go on to the brass section, and then the percussion, and then finally the strings, and show examples, and then again how all these instruments work together.
So at the time that we're actually airing this conversation, the woodwind lecture will have already been given. So what are some of the equivalents of soprano, alto, tenor, bass, say, in the brass section?
Well, in you have the trumpet, the horn. You like to refer to it as the horn, not necessarily the French horn. That's what most horn players like to. And then we have the trombone and the tuba. But within the context of each of those instruments, we have different instruments. For example, the trumpet. We have the piccolo trumpet, which is significantly smaller and can play much higher. And then we also have the F trumpet, and then we also have the B flat. We have the E flat trumpet. We have the C trumpet. So I want to talk about how those different instruments are used and why. And then also we have the bass trumpet and flugelhorn, which are occasionally used as well. So just within the trumpet family, there's a lot of different variants. Within the horn, I want to talk about how originally horns had different crooks and were in different keys and how that functioned. And then also the evolution of the trombone from the alto trombone to the tenor trombone to the bass trombone, and then also the different kinds of tubas and the baritone that's kind of in between the trombone and the tuba and euphonium and so on. So it's amazing to a lot of people how many different kinds of instruments. They just kind of know the basic instruments, but they don't understand that there's a lot of variants thereof.
Well, and just to explain one term you just used for the sake of our listeners so they don't think something quite different in reference to French horn or the horn and crooks. We're not talking about thieves here.
Yes. Horns are not crooks.
Well, they may be, crooks. But they may be, but that's an independent issue. Yeah, these
that's
are...
That's another lecture series altogether.
Yeah. The personalities of the people who play these instruments, which actually would be really interesting because I think that there are some generalities that can be made. Of course, they're not always true.
But I do know a lot of exceptions to the rule.
Yeah.
typically the trombone section isn't the petite, beautiful lady, but I can think of actually somebody who is a very short, petite, lovely gal, Cara England, who plays out in Boston, and she does not look like a trombonist, but when she puts that instrument up, she sounds amazing. She's played with the Boston Symphony, and typically your percussionist isn't your laid-back, quiet, meek person, but there are exceptions to that. But you know, it is funny the generalities that get placed on different personalities of different instrumentalists.
Yeah, but as you say, that's a whole other lecture series.
That is another lecture series too. So I won't get into that, the psychology of each section. But I do want to demonstrate each of the sections, and I do want to talk about how they're used orchestrally. And again, I don't have enough time to do this properly, but it'll give people a nice introduction.
Sure.
And with YouTube clips, it allows the audience to get some really world-class players to demonstrate things. But we will have some live performers at the lecture series as well. It's very reasonable price to get into. They have coffee and some cookies there usually, and we take a little break midway through, so it's not just 2 hours of monotonous lecture by me, but it's actually a lot of interactive things with performers and musicians, as well as some little bit of speaking on my behalf as well.
Well, it sounds like fun, like it'll be fun and informative, and you can go tomorrow morning at 9:30 to find out what a horn crook really is in the series called Discover the Symphony Orchestra with Richard Haglund, who's my guest here on Live and Local. Tomorrow, 9:30, will be the brass in the Alumni Center on the Illinois State University campus in Normal. And then next Monday, the 19th, they'll be discussing the percussion instruments. And Wednesday, the 21st, it'll cover the strings. And all those, again, are at 9:30 in the morning at the Alumni Center at ISU. Richard, thanks for joining us, and have a lot of fun with the series.
Thank you for having me. We'll talk soon.
And here's the beginning of one of the pieces, probably best known as a demonstration piece for the various sections of the orchestra. Officially, most officially, it's called Variations and Fugue on a Theme of Henry Purcell by Benjamin Britten, but it's more popularly known as The Young Person's Guide to the Orchestra. We'll hear some of the beginning in a performance here by the BBC Symphony led by Andrew Davis.